it'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our weekly 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. And we have a full house with the Football Zebras crew. I'm Ben Ostro. We also have Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Chris Soibert, and Pat Weber. So I want to hit a couple of quick items right off the bat, and then we'll get into some lengthier discussion later. We want to go over and touch base on something we covered last week, which was the T formation quarterback and whether or not when there's motion, he's got to be set for a whole second and how that all transpired. We went into what the delays were in trying to actually get that call and even eluded me the fact that, you know, we have two different quarterbacks that are going to be keyed on. So the referee has to transition off of that. So it was piecing that all together at the end of the play. Dan Campbell, the Lions coach, then decided late in the week that he was going to add to the debate that replay made the decision here. And that is actually not how this transpired. When we look at what happened on the field, we can see that there was a discussion. There was something that he brought out of that it was not admitted to by the crew. Now, that doesn't mean that replay doesn't come in after the fact and give the crew like a heads up and say, okay, you called it right. Has nothing, it's not bearing on the call. They can't weigh in on the call, but that helps to get the crew's mind off of a situation. So replay can radio down and give them some peace of mind and say, you know, yes, you did get it right, but it's not an official ruling. The other part of it is that mechanically, the call on the field does have to go up to the replay booth because there might be some reviewable element outside of that. They must know all of the elements that are on the play. So, for example, if there was, let's say there was defensive 12 men, now we have offsetting penalties. So replay is not completely out of the scope of this, and that had to be communicated upstairs as well. So I don't know what Dan Campbell is trying to imply there, but the call really came on the field. It did not come from somewhere else. So let's move over to week 7 action. And we have just on Monday, we had a suspension laid down that came out of nowhere, supposedly. Dre Greenlaw for the Broncos decided that he had some words for Brad Allen after the game and after the game-winning field goal, chased him down. And well, we saw that Brad Allen threw a flag on that. There's really nothing to enforce in this particular situation, just like we saw previous week with Brian Branch. You know, there's nothing to officiate there. So one-week suspension, but we covered this last year, but we can touch on this a little bit. About when that game is over, the game is over, and there's really nothing for the officiating crew to handle at that.
Well, there's nothing for the crew to handle. There's no penalty to enforce. There's no, even if it's an ejectable offense, there's no ejection to hand out. Unlike in the National Hockey League, where there are penalties with zeros on the clock. But still, I am encouraged that the NFL is enforcing sportsmanship and professionalism standards on players and crew and coaches after the game. There are plenty of stories from the old-time NFL officials of coaches chasing officials right up into their locker room and into the locker room, just telling them where to go and how to get there. And I'm glad the NFL is cracking down on that nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, essentially all Brad Allen can do is send his report into the league and say, hey, this is what was said to me. These are the actions that the player took. And then the league will decide again. Obviously, in this case, they decided to enforce a suspension after the fact. And I agree with Mark. There's too many times when, you know, we've seen coaches and players chase officials off the field. And this is why last season on our episodes, we were like, hey, as soon as the game is over, you get your butt out of there and don't stick around for handshakes or congratulations, because you never know what you're going to run into. So, Brad Allen clearly sent everything in, and the NFL felt the need to, again, as you said, Ben, I'd say it was surprising, but in a good way, because you usually don't see this. They don't hand out suspensions willy-nilly, but in this case, enough must have been said to Brad in order to get the ire of the NFL up.
And to the point of getting out of there quickly, when we had the Brian Branch situation, Lions and the Chiefs last week, it was starting to erupt. Even there was not zeros on the clock. So the crew was kind of standing by in a way that was, there really was nothing to do but observe. They're not there to pull it apart at that point. They can't throw flags and stop the clock. They just really have to let the clock run out. There's hundreds of other people, coaches, all the benches are out, all the photographers and everybody on the field. So it's really just, let's let this clock run out and let the league handle it. There was really nothing for them to do, nor should they be inserting themselves in what essentially is a security matter. One last quick item I want to hit is we had a defensive pass interference. It was not called on the Broncos 2 weeks ago on Dallas Goedert when they defeated the Eagles. Then when they had another NFC East foe, it was Riley Moss who did commit defensive pass interference near the end of the game. And a lot of people in Mile High Country are wondering why you have one and not the other. And we covered this in episode 21, 2 weeks ago, and what some of the buckets were that defensive pass interference fall into. But let's take a closer look at to what happened to Riley Moss against the Giants, as opposed to what happened 2 weeks ago against the Eagles.
So on this one, we kind of had Riley Moss kind of play this off as if there was really no contact here. But as I had written in our live blog, the damage was done when he tried to cover what he had done in that act. So he, again, like we have mentioned in the past many times, pass interference can fit into a number of different categories. We want to categorize pass interference, both offensive and defensive. In this case, it kind of falls into that grab and restrict category. But the funny thing about this one was Moss kind of turned back to look for the ball. And that's usually one of the telltale signs of, okay, that's an indicator of no DPI, because if the defender is either making a play on the ball or is turning back looking for the ball, they're usually absolved. But in this case, he had already committed the illegal act before he turned around to look for the ball. So just give credit to back judge Tyree Walton on that play, third year back judge. It was a good call, big moment of the game. Obviously you want to make those Cadillac calls in those situations. He can't turn and look back for the ball after he's already committed pass interference and think he's going to be, given a reprieve. And obviously it angered Sean Payton, who ended up getting a flag out of it as well, coming onto the field. So comparatively to the 2 weeks ago, to the calls from 2 weeks ago, or we should say the non-calls, those were properly non-calls in the way we described ad nauseum in our last episode or two episodes ago. But this one, it does fall into one of those DPI buckets, even though he was trying to clear himself after the fact.
Yeah, not to get too deep into the weeds on what Sean Payton did, but coming onto the field and especially coming down to the 5 yard line or near the end zone, our call is as automatic as it gets for UNS on a head coach.
And we look at the call that was made, and as you said, Cam, that was it was a pretty clear call there. I know that this was, you call it point of emphasis or just more of an interpretation where they wanted to clamp down on this cheap look back at the ball. Oh, I've got the pass on interference there. So now they're saying just looking back is not enough. There's got to be some sort of sustained play on the ball, because you know, maybe at some of the lower levels, we wouldn't have to get that detailed. But, you know, now you're dealing with professionals that are trying to make things look like what they aren't. So they're tactically, you're going to look back really quickly, but you know you're going to plow right into that receiver if you continue on your way. And the excuse being that, oh, I'm playing the ball. That kind of got wiped out. As long as you're doing some sort of sustained look back, but a quick glance back or something right before the ball arrives is not going to help if you wind up going right through the receiver. We also saw a couple of things. Well, last week there was an offensive pass interference that wiped out a very long touchdown. And we kind of touched on it a little bit last week. And that became something of that Ramon George, the vice president of officiating, went over with all of the officials, and all the teams then saw as well what specific criteria they were looking at. So, I mean, I jotted down a few of the comments that they were looking at, which is the receiver when they really, it's the creating the separation, driving through a defender, you know, within that initial charge from the line. The ability to shuck a defender, but you can't push off in doing so. And then also we have situations where the separation that's being created is not to that receiver himself, but it's already creating a block for a teammate who's going to catch the ball, and it's already providing that separation. So it's essentially a block that precedes the pass being caught. So those were like three elements that were discussed. Of course, also, you know, where specifically you can have hands, where you know, once you start getting into pushing to the chest, now we're into pass interference. So I wanted you to kind of step through some of these items that they were viewed, and you know, what's more pervasive? What do you see field level? And how easy is it to key some of these things from the different positions?
Those are the exact same three buckets that we categorize them at the high school level as well. Creating separation, driving through, and blocking downfield. Those are the ones I teach to new officials in our new officials class at the high school level. So it goes up all the way. And yeah, so in some of these examples that we had seen being communicated to both the officials and the teams, we have these designed plays that look like accidents. And that's really the skill of the professional game, to try to, as you said, Ben, tactically find a way to make something appear as if the contact is incidental, where just going over film work is going to be the best way to identify these tactics. And again, I know one of the examples was or kind of falls in that bucket of blocking downfield, where one receiver is running a, you know, a 7 yard and 7 yard post, and is starting to cut in for the second part of that post route. And he's seeking out the safety in order to gain separation for a slot receiver who's breaking outside to make a reception. You may not think on first glance that it's a deliberate tactic, but it's what's being coached now in order to get around this. So again, just like we categorize our DPI, we categorize our OPI as well. And it's getting more and more difficult to detect these tactics, which is why I think Vice President Ramon George is doing a great job with putting these examples together, really focusing in on, hey, this is something that is trying to be done to game the system, to act in a way to make it seem as if it's an incidental move, but in actuality, it's a designed play. It's initiating contact and trying to either, like we said, create separation, drive through a defender, or block downfield.
You also have to be aware, and this is, I think, one of the toughest aspects to it, especially for offensive pass interference. A receiver who might have a step on a defender, if he looks and he judges that the pass is a 50% or less chance of it being completed, he might slow down to draw the contact and make it look like the defender is playing through him. Now, sometimes it may be wiped off as tangled feet, but sometimes the defender can actually make it, the receiver can make it look like the defender interfered with him when the receiver is slowing up and drawing contact. Very difficult play with
the and one of the yeah one of the examples it kind of parallels what you say, which is the receiver pivots to make the catch. So he knows when the ball's going to arrive. He knows what the route is. And so that little push as the defender is trying to put the brakes on, and that push, first of all, gives the receiver a little bit of momentum to go the other direction, but also makes sure that the defender slides a little downfield a little bit more. So it gains a double separation in that. And then the appearance is that, oh, well, the defender just kind of slipped because he was trying to pivot direction really quickly. So again, one of those surreptitious ways of trying to, to sell the no foul there.
Well, I think mechanically, especially on like pick plays or downfield blocking, is where those plays happen a lot near the end zones and, third and short, third and medium. And that's a good time for, the short and deep wings to stay at their keys a little longer. Just to make sure you don't miss any potential action by someone trying to free up one of their other receivers.
And the one thing that also comes into play, I mean, we have we have to worry about whether the ball is in the air or not for defensive pass interference, but offensive pass interference it starts from the snap until the pass is completed. So that opens up a little bit of a window there where you're not having to key on where the ball is at that particular point, as is with defensive pass interference. But then again, that also means that there's more road to hoe there to keep an eye on more of these tactics for a longer stretch. The longer the play goes, the longer that stretches out, and probably when there's scrambling going on, it does lead to some antsiness with the receivers. So let's pivot now to our last topic in the final minutes that we have. And it started with a situation that we just caught out of the corner of our eye when the TV came back from break, and Bill Vinovich, the referee, is in the bench area and, basically talking to one of the players. And I'll let you set it up, Chris, since you were the one that wrote it.
Yeah, I was watching that Vikings-Eagles game, and they were coming back from break, and the Eagles had just had pick six. And on that play, Jalen Carter had pressured Carson Wentz, hit him, rushed the pass, and ultimately led to that pick six. And you could see on that play, obviously Bill Vinovich is looking right at the quarterback right there, and you can see him almost dip his head like he's uber focused on the hit. And Jalen Carter does an excellent job of legally hitting Carson Wentz exactly, I think, how the NFL wants their quarterbacks to be hit. Midsection, helmet to the side, wrap up tackle. And as he's going to the ground, Jalen Carter puts his arms out and pretty much catches his own body weight so it does not land on Carson Wentz. And, at the time I thought, great hit, whatever. And then they came back from commercial and you can see Bill Vinovich over there on the sideline, like you said, Ben, basically giving kind of the signal of putting his hands out to the side like, hey, Jalen, you did a really good job keeping your body weight off of Wentz, and that's why you didn't get a flag thrown on you for roughing the passer. And you can see Bill almost kind of smile at him and laugh. And that brought up a big discussion between us all of the importance of preventive officiating and giving positive feedback to players when they do a good job of not fouling. And I think it's super important at the high school level, especially with young kids who are, doing their best to make plays on a varsity team or even JV or freshman. And sometimes they just don't know what they're doing, and giving that positive feedback is great. And I think it's what separates, Cam, we've gone to this before, what separates good officials from great officials. That is one thing that I firmly believe separates a good official from a great official.
Yeah. I think it's always a good thing when we, anybody can have positive reinforcement versus negative all the time. And it's always interesting sometimes when you give that positive reinforcement to a high school or a college player who is so unused to hearing that. And you can tell how it has a positive effect when you're encouraging them to play in that manner and having a good legal play and just keep doing what they're doing.
I've done that out on the field a couple of times, saying, good hit, 44, nice job. That's what we like to see. And Jim Tunney spoke of it in his book, too, that he would say, a defender would veer off at the last second and not hit the quarterback. And, you know, he'd tell the player, smart move. If you would have hit him, that would have been 15 yards. So positive reinforcement is always a good thing. And Pat, you're right. A lot of negative reinforcement many times out there on the football field with these players. But and unfortunately, a lot of it from us when we start throwing a flag. But always positive reinforcement from the officials is a good thing. And good job, Bill Vinovich.
And Cam, we have a clip that we've run several times through the years. We recorded it, or we pulled it from NFL Films in 2014, and it was line judge Tim Pedraza, who was talking with 49ers tight end Vernon Davis on the sideline. Basically, you know, it was where he was lined up, and it was kind of pushing the line, and we'll take a listen to that.
It's right here. Yeah, I'm talking.
Listen, babe.
On trips, you pressed up the line of scrimmage. You make your tackle look like he's further back than he is.
Which one, though? My line at?
So you go over here.
I'm checking with you guys at all times.
I know, but you're really pressing. I can get you to back up some.
Just go like this.
I was going to point.
Yeah, you want like this? No, check it again. Right? You give me no pick.
All right. Well, I'm sitting with
something. Gotcha. So in this situation, we have a line judge comes to the sideline during a stoppage. It says, look, you got to keep an eye on where I am. You're pushing it. You're in that gray area. And I haven't thrown the flag now, but now I'm talking.
Yeah, exactly. So these talk to moments are really critical in, you know, trying to prevent slowing down the game with fouls. And just essentially, we're not coaching the players, because I know at least at the high school level, coaches don't like that. We're just giving, you know, tips to prevent them from getting fouled. And I'm sure when you word it that way, coaches are going to love you for it. But yeah, we do this all the way down at the high school level too. Now I know at high school, they're not really sitting on the bench as much. They're all usually standing there, but during stoppages, if I see something on a formation alignment or some sort of tactic in terms of tackling on defense, I'll go up to a player and say, hey, and I'll let them know. And, you know, usually they appreciate that and they want to correct their technique, and they, at the end of the day, they just don't want to penalize. They don't want themselves to be penalized. They don't want to hurt their team. So it's a great way in order to show that you're staying involved with the game. The players and coaches take a liking to that you're engaged with the game, and you're also taking that preventative officiating aspect to prevent teams from getting fouled in a way that won't slow down the pace of play, while at the same time keeping it fair for both sides. Obviously, you don't, if you want to do a talk to one team, you want to make sure that if you can get into the other, make it look like you're not helping out one side, because that's never what we're trying to do with this. More so, get the players and coaches in line with proper technique, whether that comes to something as simple as alignment or something more complicated like tackling technique.
And I think that fascinates people that haven't officiated, fans that realize that it's not flags that are the only ways that officials communicate to the players on the field. There's a lot of conversation in between, you know, keep it clean, you know, move aside, get back to your huddle, everything to keep everybody, you know, out of trouble, keep, you know, some discretion on there. Now, you know, we're not looking at situations where there's a violation that really needs to be called. I mean, if somebody's, you know, stepping in the neutral zone, that's not a talk to, that is a flag. But if it's really kind of on that borderline, and you know that, you know, by the time we get to the next series, it's going to be a little bit more, well, then that talk to actually prevents the flag, which not only do does the team appreciate, but the fans do as well, because then there's less of the officials are part of the game. And with that, we wrap up another podcast here. And I just want to point out that our full discussion on when the game is over, we have an episode 13, When the Clock Hits Zero, that goes into all sorts of detail as to what officials should be doing at the end of the game. So check that out, and check out every podcast episode that we have on your favorite app. Thank you very much. Catch you next time.